You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You know, sometimes I forget how massive Princess Nokia is. Sometimes I forget the music I've made because I'm just living in the present. You know, I've raised myself as an independent, even though my dad readopted me at 16. I have been on my own financially, you know, independently since I was 16. I think in the early 2000s, was into diplomats and mixtape culture, and I was late to it because I had not discovered that. But you know what was my introduction to that actual thing? Nicki Minaj in 2007. I think female hip hop is still not even being given the revolutionary scope that it deserves. So I quite love it, and I'm a big supporter of it, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Hey, first of all, I want to say it's a pleasure to meet you. I've heard your name ringing out for time. I used to see your name on flyers and stuff, and I've seen you on festival lineups and everything. So when they said, do you want to talk to Princess Nokia? I was like, yeah, definitely. Like, I have to. and really, the reason why I wanted to connect is because I wanted to talk to you about your journey, your story, and, you know, your love of hip hop and everything else. So yeah, I really appreciate this opportunity and this time to do this. So, first of all, have you been coping with the lockdown? Like, how's that been for you?
I equally love having a good time, and I equally love staying at home and smoking weed all day and watching movies. So, in a more lighter sense, I wasn't mad at it. However, it was debilitating to my spirit, and not being able to travel and not being able to work. Not being able to see my family sometimes, and, you know, having hypochondria of maybe always thinking that one is sick or could get sick is very difficult. But, you know, I've managed, you know, it's frustrating. It's confusing. It's heartbreaking, but it's also been quite normal for me. And I always try to make the best of any situation, no matter the circumstance. So I've just been trying to spend time with my family, be healthy, you know, and just make music and continue on, even though I felt maybe as if the world had stopped.
Yeah, it's crazy. Did you find you were making more music than before, or did you find that you were able to write better, or was it kind of like, more the same?
It was all the same, I think. Nothing stopped me. I kept going to the studio.
Okay, so and you were saying it was watching movies. Is like, is there anything that you was feeling that you've watched that you may not have watched before? Is there any movies where you're like, yeah, that kind of, I'm glad I saw that?
Well, I did see a few movies that I really like. I did see one movie called Crip Camp, which was just fantastic, and it was about this camp for people with disabilities in New York City and upstate. And it was in the late 60s, early 70s. And it was run by a whole bunch of hippies and disability advocates. And the movie is just so revolutionary in the message, in the beauty, in the documentation of this actual camp that was just really, really special. I think it was called Camp Hope. I could be wrong. But just seeing all these people just being able to be so free at this camp, and the connection between the campers, the counselors, the revolution behind, you know, advocacy of disabled people in New York City in the United States. It was just really beautiful. It made me cry a lot, and it was really something else.
Okay. Wow. So where are you at now? Which part of the US are you in?
I still live in New York City.
Oh, okay. All right. That's cool. So you're born and raised in New York?
Yes.
Okay. So you were born in the home of hip hop, right? It's where it all started. And which borough was you raised in?
I was raised in Manhattan in the Bronx.
Right. That's ground zero, right? For like
in the foundations of hip hop. You know, my parents were both New Yorkers that were born here in the 60s. So we're teenagers at the birth of hip hop, pretty much. And adults at its like foundation and genesis, like young adults. And my mom is from Harlem and my dad is from the Lower East Side. And I've lived in the Bronx almost half of my life. So there's just a very special place that I have for those places. And I'm really happy to be from here. There's really no other place that I love quite so much as this, except maybe for Puerto Rico.
Okay. Like, what was your first interaction with hip hop? Because it's like, you know, from where you was born and raised, it's like, at what point were you like, oh, this is something that I like, or this is something that, you know, what is this? You know, when was the first time that you came across it?
I have a very distinct memory. I was watching a VHS of the movie Beat Street with my dad. And my dad introduced me to the movies Wild Style and Beat Street when I was a little girl. And he introduced me because my father loves, you know, that was his time. So my father's introducing me to Wild Style and Beat Street. And here I have these really significant pieces of art and movies that are depicting New York hip hop. And it's different for me because I was born in the 90s, you know, I'm close to a millennial. So as I'm little, you know, I'm watching these movies with a big fascination. And there's a scene in Beat Street in the beginning at the party that they put together in an abandoned building. They're like fucking with the lights and the electricity. And my father's telling me every single thing, every detail about the movie and how it connected to his life. From the graffiti to the break dancing to the DJ to the break beat from funk and soul and disco to people, you know, New York was so crazy at the time. There were so many arson scams going on. There were so many abandoned buildings. Right. And it was really easy to go in the building, clean it up, and throw a party. And in the beginning of the party, the DJ, Kenny, he's like, oh, there's Shara, Lisa Lee, and Debbie D. I want to go play their record. He was like, get their record. And he has them perform, and it's three women. Us girls are the best friends. When one of them got money, the other one lends. When we go out, what the boys want, yeah, you know we got. The fly girl, Debbie D. Lisa, one of them, the whole my policies. So, hey, brother, moving close. Take me on a cruise and watch me float. Floating down my mind, show me I'm fresh. And that was really, really life-changing, and I loved it so much that it's still with me forever. And ironically, growing up, I've always loved hip-hop, always loved like the classics, but I was always into rock growing up. So I kind of was not always into what was going on at the time. I was more into the old stuff. Mm. And I had like a combination of like old school hip-hop and kind of like rock and roll.
Wow. So how do you start rapping? What gives you the audacity to start putting words together and reciting them?
I really like to write poetry, and I really wanted to put that into rap form because it just felt like the things that I was saying were just a little bit more cooler and jazzier than spoken word. So it was me I had a feeling, I had a way with words when I would write them down. And then I just started kind of rapping and freestyling to myself at 16, 17, always writing little raps and rhymes. And I started recording them on Facebook when I was a teenager. So there's like little instances, I don't have them anymore, but there are really like, I have like an 11-year kind of documentation of me doing little rhymes and doing little funny, cool things. And then the first rap I recorded, I was 17 years old. It was on 7th Street and Avenue D. in my friend Clyde's house, and I recorded the song that is on YouTube. It's called Destiny. It was the first song I wrote. It was like, been on a strike, sitting lines with the welfare. Been a goon since daycare, never won to play fair. I got you vexed as you coming and going. Your cheeks is looking red like your period is flowing. So I did that, and it just gave me, that was like about 2010. That was about 2010. It was 2010, and I just kind of sought it out. I wanted to create. I wanted to make art. I wanted to rap. And not even just rap, I just wanted to make music. So I would find places and spaces that I could do that. And it eventually parlayed into people kind of noticing me through Wavy Spice and through Bitch I'm Posh, which is a song I put out in 2011 or 2012, I believe. And then, you know, I had this attention from like labels and stuff, but in the midst of it all, I was never marketed as an artist or an entertainer. I was literally a teenager that was getting this attention online. So it was a bit much for me because that was something that I had never intended to go so fast and so quick into. So I just allowed myself to grow in the DIY community, in the gay nightlife scene, in the rave scene in New York. And that's where I felt most at home. That's where I felt most, where I could thrive and where I was loved and liked a lot. And my music was asked to be shared. So I would just do a lot of live shows at raves and parties and do all these rattling, you know, just ROM and stuff. And that's really kind of like my foundation. It really is true to hip hop, I believe. I feel like my foundation with hip hop comes from its roots of the DIY culture and poetry and diaspora and self-discovery. And it wasn't anything materialist or you know, ill-intentioned. It was all very organic and all very natural.
You did it your way.
Always have.
I mean, it's fascinating to hear that because, you know, I think it's dope you've come up through a different way, you know, to what is seen as the norm or whatever. But that's crazy. Like, because I was wondering, I was like the music's dope. And like, I got your new track, which is banging. I'm like, where's she been? I'm like, how... Yeah, that's why I wanted to speak to you. I was like, how did you do it? How did you come through? Because you're in New York, you've got amazing music, it's the home of hip hop, massive place for the music business. That must have took a lot of guts to be like, I ain't doing this, I'm doing this. Like, I'm not taking what could be the easy way out or taking the check or not trying to play by anybody else's rules. It's like you created your own lane and did it very, very well. Like, what gave you that resolve to stick to it? Because I know a lot of people would have just been like, you know.
Thankfully, I had a really, really honest conscience to be self-aware of myself. I was a teenager, a young adult. You know, I've raised myself as an independent, even though my dad readopted me at 16. I have been on my own financially, you know, independently since I was 16. I didn't really have a lot of guidance. I didn't really have, you know, I had a fun dad, but not like a strict dad. Like, what are you up to? What are you doing? You know, so I was like, I'm all alone. You know, I feel like I'm kind of like navigating something that I have no idea of education, you know, like, so I was very, like, I would just, without even being attuned to it, I was attuned to the pitfalls of bad deals, of young artists, of, you know, rapid signings. And that was something I wanted to avoid all the way, because I've seen so many examples of people just getting stuck in deals, getting shelved, being just, you know, being taken advantage of. And that was something I never wanted to do. Or never needed in my life. You know, I don't have no one telling me what to do in real life. I just felt like I didn't need anything controlling me. Not that I was, you know, overly paranoid. I just really was a bit smarter. And I realized that I had created kind of through my experiences from 2014, 2015 to 2016. It was a beautiful flourishing period for me where I put out this one, you know, experimental album, lots of drum and bass, lots of tribal music, you know, Afro-Caribbean music, tribal drum and bass, very inspired by British, UK, DB, Goldie, Bjork, Sneaker Pimps, Massive Attack, Trip Hop, my, you know, all the stuff I was into growing up that were really had inspired me at that time. And then, you know, making like a making like soul, like R&B and soul music on, you know, like I would just task myself with creating a project every year.
Right.
I would just task myself with creating a project every year and independently releasing it and seeing what would happen. And what would happen was I would release it independently, and though it was more small scale, it was making a serious impact and wave on youth culture, on hip hop and music. And it was creating an entirely beautiful fan base for me. And that was good enough for me. That was really good enough for me. And I saw how much, to be quite frank, I saw how ahead of my time I was musically, creatively. I was very creative. Forward the themes, my, you know, I've directed 17 of my 22 videos. I worked on them entirely with my own collaborators. You know, I've edited them all. I did costuming on them, wardrobe, casting, everything you could think of. I was becoming empowered by my labor of love. And that was really this really self-aware, refreshing experience where I was going, I'm making incredible music. I'm making incredible visuals. I have incredible themes that I'm not really finding in music at the moment or people popular with my age. And this is going to make me stand out and have that foundation of greatness, because I am a woman who's writing my own music. I own all my music. I'm creating it. I'm paying for it. I'm funding it. And for a young woman in hip hop, for a young woman with impoverished background, for a brown woman, I was doing really, really monumental things. I was stepping out. I was, you know, breaking barriers and creating art. A texture of my own that was all mine in my own world that I didn't need to explain to anyone. And that has kind of just been the most sufficient thing for me. And I think that rewarded me in the end because, you know, I quite eventually found my placing in the music industry and did incredible distribution deals. Just recently did my first at 28 years old, first major label signing. So I was just setting myself up. It was not until recently that I wanted to actually be a universal entertainer, thought I could. So it's all been really, really special. I think the journey has been slower but special, but I anticipated that because I see myself doing this for a long time. It's not just for the moment.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to take you back to the beginning of what you were saying when you were saying that, you know, at the age of 16, you was in New York City, you was adopted. And you're in New York City right now. You can hear, you're literally in, you know, in the heart of the city. We can hear it outside. We can hear, you know, the streets literally from where you are. It is one of the most hardest cities to live in, though. It is one of the most unforgiving, one of the most harshest, one of the most, I even say cutthroat. It's like, you know, people talk about London being bad. Nothing on New York City. How did you survive?
How did I survive? By having fun. I've had so much fun growing up here. There's a lot of bad things, yeah, but they're normal after a while. And they don't overshadow the greatness and the magic of this city, which is so special and so wonderful. And I survived by being resilient, by being resourceful, and by just having fun. You know, there was a lot of things that I didn't get to at a point in my life after leaving foster care. There was like, I mean, I feel like I survived through optimism. I survived through a miracle. I survived through positivity, but I always wanted to just have fun at the end of the day, no matter what opposition I was carrying or having. I would go find a rave. I would go find a party. I would go find a skate park. I would go find a bicycle, or I would go to the soccer field. I would go skate. I would just find things to do to make myself happy, to have fun, to meet other people, and to just keep the day going. You know, I used to have no money in my pocket, and we would go steal 40s. We would go hang out in Tompkins Square Park. We would go to raves, come back out all hours of the night. And I just had fun. Just really had fun.
Okay. Being an independent artist, what was the most difficult challenges that you faced?
I think at the time, doing everything by myself and not knowing how to do a lot of stuff and not knowing how to do it properly. You know, if I had a better team, you know, it's a miracle that 1992 has created such a movement in the world. But I only imagine what could have happened had I had the proper rearing. So, you know, there's some mistakes in the way. There's some trials and errors, but there's no regrets.
On your journey coming through as an independent artist, is there any artist that are producers that really helpful in helping you get put on, or give you new amazing advice, or just giving you that, putting the battery in your back and just literally, like they say, lifting you up to like pursue what you was doing?
I have a few people and things that I could count as support. Owls, the producer, being one of them. Christopher Lair, who produced all the Metallic Butterfly, who produced most of Everything Sucks, who produced a lot of good stuff with me, who's my DJ on tour. He has been my older brother and my mentor for a really long time. I started making music with him when I was 20 years old. He comes from a whole different world of music. I can count him as a big source of help, support, inspiration, collaboration. Early, I was really supported by Rinse FM and, you know, Genius from Rinse, you know, was an incredible producer, incredible manager, incredible, you know, DJ, who I have a lot of love for. I count the UK as a big support of me. Rough Trade, XL, Platoon, you know, Tony Seltzer, Jesus, people like, yeah, I don't know. Like I just found little homes in these unique places, and those people and those have really been my partners the way through.
Okay.
Supporter.
So now we're in 2021. What's your vision now? Like what's your aims now? Because no one can tell you anything because you've done it. You've done world tours, you've done shows, you've put out albums, you know what you can spend on the marketing budget. You know what tracks would work with certain crowds. You know how to build a fan base. You know how to do videos. There's not a lot anybody can tell you, right? So you've got this knowledge of being an artist 360, you know the whole thing. Like, and I'm not saying this, I'm not trying to gas you or anything like that, but what I want to know is, like, what happens next?
I think I get to enter a new chapter of my life musically, where I am doing things in a very mainstream but organic fashion. And I am creating more accessible, universal music that is going to be, like, I just have a lot of help and I have a lot of good sourcing. So this is like me, this is kind of a reintroduction of myself to the world with all these, with this new beautiful support and new beautiful chapter. And I think I've intended and what I have planned for the world is being a pop star, you know, being a universal pop star. You've seen my favorite artists do it and do it on their own way, in their own terms. Shakira, J-Lo, Sia. So I've known the trajectory of my musicality. And it's like, I've done everything that I could do in the underground. And I did it well. And this is like a beautiful kind of story because, like, you know, there's only so much that one in my position where I come from, like myself, goes. You know, they're usually like associated point of time in music and, oh, that was a jam, or remember her, that was so cool. Oh, I wonder what she's up to now, or like she fell off, you know. How many stories do we have of that archetype? How many times do we see someone like myself really continue to blossom and reinvent themselves and have really popular modern music? I can't really say that. I think it's more few than common. And it's like, it would be a shame. I think when I talk to my fans about me signing and me growing or me lilished in music, it's not that I have changed. It's that I'm not going to sit in my own shit and continue to wallow in the past. One has to grow, one has to evolve. And I have that power. I think it would be really shameful and hard for me to hide myself from the world. You know, I am meant to be a star. I'm meant to be someone. I am, you know, and I don't want to apologize for that. I don't feel like I need to. You know, there are people who are very special in this world, and I know that I am special. I know that I have the reach, the creativity, the talent, the beauty, the mindset to be timeless, to be universal, to expand beyond my wildest beliefs. And that's really what I intend and plan to do. I really plan to do something cool. But, you know, like all the women who've inspired me, Gwen Stefani started out in a ska band, became a huge pop star. Sia started out making music with 07. Trip hop music, and then, you know, you see Sia's chandelier. Shakira was a rock artist at 19 years old and became a crossover and superstar. You know, even women like Cardi B, who grew up, who was my same age, grew up in the underbelly of the Bronx and became a major artist. It's like, there are some people that, there are women like us who have these beautiful passageways in life, and I feel like I'm just following those footsteps.
That's amazing. That's like it's like something out of a book. Like that's crazy. The book of Princess Nokia.
Very empowered and very excited for the future.
Yeah, that's, you know what, it's inspiring to hear. Like, I love that. I love all of the energy that you're giving out right now as well. And you know, it's fascinating you're talking about, you know, other artists and other women who started out as one thing and ended up doing something else. You know, I know Sia from my first introduction to Sia was when she was on a UK Garage record, like, which was massive in the clubs and everything else. And then fast forward a number of years and she's something totally different now. It's crazy the way that people can reinvent themselves. But the one thing I would say is your lyricism is sharp, like, you're tight, you're in the pocket, as a rapper. It's not, you can't question your ability in terms of your delivery and everything else and what you're doing. So what keeps you focused like that on top of everything else that you've done and the transition that you've done from, you know, moving from one side of the business to another? But how do you stay focused on delivering the art and making sure that you're in the pocket lyrically?
I just write from the heart. I just continue to write from the heart. And I continue to have fun. My music, I have a lot of I have a few rules in my music. A few. But I think they are very distinct. I don't like trashing other women, especially my peers in music. Because I think it's hateful. I think it's a little, it's just unbecoming of me. I love women. I love my peers. I love my colleagues. I may not know them, but I have an eternal respect for them. So this isn't a competitive sport for me. So it's not like I'm, you know, saying the same thing over and over again. I'm not using women as an antagonist, and I'm not making myself seem like I'm better than anyone. So you take that equation out, you get something refreshing, because what am I replacing it with? I'm replacing it with something a bit different. That's like one thing I do. And then there's like another thing that I do is that I just use references and I just use a lot of references and symbolisms that refer and depict my life and what's individualistic about me. I'm a rock star, like nerd, industry calling, I give them the curve. You know, like Gwen Stefani, go bananas, now I'm posing front of the cameras. And you hear the ad lib, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. And it's like, I just kind of like use all my favorite things and I continue to create with them. And I feel like that's really cool. You know, I feel like it just may sound a bit more linear or more wholesome, but it's kind of my secret ingredient, you know? Saying I'm God's favorite flavor, I'm blessed and highly flavored. He give me all them blessings, and them blessings turn to paper. So yeah, I've been done wrong by people in my life. I've been taken advantage of. I've had people hurt me. They're not gonna get the benefit of the doubt of me talking about what happened, but they will see me happy, and they will see me shine, and they will see my sacred wisdom being extracted. So you're gonna see how I use art to continuously grow and heal and become richer and stronger and deeper. And I like just using all those ideas to solidify myself and make good music. And I can't lie to you, I just think that because I've been doing it so long, like, I don't say I'm the best rapper, I'm not, but can't lie. I guess I guess after all this time, it's unmistakable. I think my tone is unmistakable. I think my delivery is quite unmistakable. Sometimes I surprise myself with how great of a rapper I am. It still sometimes doesn't hit me I don't realize it. I think because maybe I am a bit modest, or maybe because I take myself out of that idea, and then I look back and I things, or I'm in it, and or I'm just repeating music, and I'm like, that sounds sick. That sounds like anything I've ever heard. And then I get the reaffirmation from my colleagues, my peers, the people that I work with in management. And I go, oh, this is why I'm in this position. So, okay. You know, I still surprise myself. I still get to have that breath of fresh air. I still feel wet behind the ears. I still feel, you know, I think I have an identity outside of rap. So I can still switch back before. And it's not like, you know, sometimes I forget how massive Princess Nokia is. Sometimes I forget the music I've made because I'm just living in the present.
Okay, that's dope. That's dope.
Hello, I'm La La La, Let Me Explain. And this is It's Not You, It's Them, But It Might Be You. I'm here to answer all your questions around love, relationships, sex, dating dilemmas, and anything else you throw my way. Join me three times a week as we work through the depths of this intimacy pool together. From Sony Music Entertainment, listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host, created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you'll instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. Two episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
We started this conversation where, you know, you were talking about Wild Style and Beat Street, and you recited a rap by three women in hip hop. I don't know anybody else that could recite that. I really don't. I don't know anybody. Like, you know, I know some of the biggest hip hop nerds. I know some of the biggest rap addicts, rap fans, rap enthusiasts. They wouldn't even know their names, let alone be able to recite it. But seeing that you grew up on that and seeing that you was introduced to that at such a young age, what's your take on women in hip-hop today, 2021? Like, how do you view that now?
I think it's genius. I think it's wonderful. I think it's amazing. I mostly just listen to, and I hate to call it like that, but I mostly just listen to female hip-hop. Like I said, I grew up really into rock music, right? Techno. Everybody, I think in the early 2000s, was into Diplomats and mixtape culture, and I was late to it because I had not discovered that. But you know what was my introduction to that actual thing? Nicki Minaj in 2007. I heard something on MySpace, and it changed me. I said, what is this? And then the way my friends were discovering music and taking to new artists, I had that in my own way. So it wasn't for masculine hip hop. It was my first time I really became obsessed with hip hop and actively searched for it was when I was 15 years old. And I was a young Anika, like just really starting the foundations of her career and downloading all that music that I could and being feeling like the coolest person alive because I one discovered this really cool artist. And then also it was new for me. I had never done stuff like I was not into that. Like, you know, my friend, I knew Diplomats cause I'm from Harlem and that's what everybody listened to, but it wasn't on my iPod. It wasn't something I was listening to. I wasn't into Chris Brown. I wasn't into Chingy. I wasn't into, you know, the stuff that my peers like, you know, like B2K and all of that. Like, it was like cool to me. I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. Like it sounds cool, but it's not something I was actively looking for watching. Or wanted, I was like, you know, into Incubus, Nirvana, so many bands, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, it was wild. So then I get reintroduced to modern hip hop and I realized that I only like female hip hop really. You know, I like all types of records, I like all types of people, but here is this predicate for me of not someone from the Little Kim or Foxy Brown era that I really recall, but someone that is in the millennium. And that seeing the trajectory of so many things, like I've always been a champion of female hip hop, you know, I grew up loving Lil' Kim and Foxy Brown, you know, Roxanne Shaw, like every era of hip hop, female hip hop, I love and have notes. Like I'm like a nerd for Roxanne Shanté, Queen Latifah, Yo-Yo, you know? Hadi Tadi, Charlie Baltimore, Foxy Brown, Lil' Kim, Gangsta Boo, Hurricane G, Trina, you know, Nicki Minaj, Remy Ma. And then when the cornucopia of female artists started growing on the internet, I loved it. And I was a part of it, but I've always loved it. And I loved watching all of the girls in the last 10 years flourish and create their own individual storylines and sounds. And I think that at the time, sometimes it was like you had to be really into cool music to know that stuff. And now it's everywhere and we see it. And there's so many options. There's so many tastes. There's so many textures. And I'm like, the nerd in me is like, yay. So I'm just happy for these women. I'm happy that they are experiencing this refreshing time in music. I think that they deserve it. I think female hip hop is still not even being given the revolutionary scope that it deserves. So I quite love it, and I'm a big supporter of it, and I'm happy to be a part of it.